from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you've ever wondered what this program would sound like without the nutty pre-recorded pieces, this is your day. Because somehow CD burners went on strike today. But no, it's fine. We'll have a good time. I want to thank everybody in the San Francisco Bay Area who showed up for all those. My God, I blitzed the San Francisco Bay Area this week and vice versa. And I'll tell you something. The most amazing thing, there was a couple of book appearances and I did an evening at the Napa Valley Opera House. And so much of the crowd in each of those places were you folks who listened to the radio broadcast in San Francisco. Now, this week, I'm doing a book signing or two in Pittsburgh and in Philadelphia. So the challenge is to you, you listeners in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, come on out. Show up the Bay Area. Show you can do better. Act as if it was an NFL game, you know? Take the challenge. And there's also a Christmas sing-along with Judith Owen, myself, special guests, in Sellersville, Pennsylvania, on Wednesday and in New York City on Friday. So that's the news from me. Now, meanwhile, the news from the world, one hears this Sunday morning that Secretary of Defense, outgoing Secretary of Defense, Rumsfeld, and don't it feel good to say that, paid a visit to Iraq this weekend. And guess what kind it was? That's right, a surprise secret visit, because the security situation, well, it tells you all you need to know about the security situation. When the outgoing Secretary of Defense can't say, you know where I'm going? I'm going to Iraq. And while there, he said that premature withdrawal would be a big mistake. Now, I assume he's talking about Iraq. Assume he's not, you know, auditioning for to be the next spokesman for Viagra after Bob Dole. Although, you know, not the worst thing he could do. But all right, let's take him at his word. Premature withdrawal from Iraq would be a big mistake. Ladies and gentlemen, I think you have to give some credence to the man, because nobody knows more about big mistakes than Don Rumsfeld. And if you want to know really what kind of culture we are, I think, well, it's just nice to remember at this time of year that while the real polar bears are running out of ice floes on which to live and fish upon which to feed, the fantasy polar bears in this country are handing each other Cokes. Hello, welcome to the show.
get truly funky if you ain't playing with soul. Cause what we got, more hipper than what you got. What we got, more hipper than what you got. You just came to play. Monster swing. Watch your back and get the hell out the way. Let the gentlemen do their thing. What we got, more hipper than what you got. What we got, can't fake the fun. More hipper than what you got.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And I apologize for just all those notices at the top, but it's a busy week, and I got a book to sell.
In other words, buy the book.
Thank you, Mr. President. Appreciate that. What? Oh, it's called Not Enough Indians. Thank you for asking. Not Enough Indians. And it does. Oh, do you think it makes a perfect Christmas gift? Yeah, me too. So anyway, ladies and gentlemen, first up, I think it's time for a copyrighted... before we get to the copyrighted features, let's just... How safe are we? All right, Dateline Honolulu, part of the ninth test of the sea-based U.S. missile defense system, was a success. What part? The incoming enemy missiles were launched successfully. Those are the targets. The incoming enemy missiles. We did that good. And they were monitored by both U.S. and Dutch ships. The key interceptor missiles, the ones that are going to shoot them down, suffered from a failure to launch. So, okay. You know, it's the good news and the bad news. If we're the enemy, we're good. If we're us, we're not so good. The agency blamed an incorrect system setting that caused a fire control system aboard the destroyer USS Lake Erie to shut down the first of two planned launches. The second was intentionally stopped because the primary aim of the system was to test the ability to simultaneously knock out two incoming missiles, in case the enemy thinks one might not be enough, you see, ladies and gentlemen. The failed test off Hawaii came as veterans were gathering for the Pearl Harbor celebration. Sorry, commemoration. Both interceptor missiles aboard the USS Lake Erie failed to launch. Both target missiles dropped harmlessly into the ocean. First was lost. Second is being recovered for future tests. That's our missile defense system, ladies and gentlemen. We play the enemy well. We just can't play us well. What fascinated me about the Iraq Survey Group report that came out this week, aside from the fact that it was necessary to get a bunch of old folks to try to help out the youngster, help out the grown-ups. I guess we needed the grand grown-ups to help the grown-ups figure out operation, what the hell do we do now? And, of course, the answer is really nothing, because everything, if you stop to think about it, everything we've done since the first move in has been relentlessly behind the beat. It's just like listening to a heavily narcotized drummer. Just everything, even if it had been well-intended or well-thought-out, was late. So now these guys come with this plan that maybe would have worked, maybe would have been at least worth discussing 2 years ago. But they do suggest emphasizing training. Get out of the combat business, do the training. Okay? A couple of reports from the Washington Post. The depletion of major equipment in the American military, tanks, Bradley fighting vehicles, helicopters, and armored Humvees, has left many military units in the United States without adequate training gear, according to officials. You wouldn't want civilians saying that, would you? Partly as a result of the shortages, many U.S. units are rated unready to deploy, officials say, raising alarm in Congress and concern among military leaders. General Schoomaker, Army Chief of Staff, is lobbying hard for more money to repair what he calls the holes in his force, saying current war funding is inadequate to make the Army well. Asked in a recent hearing whether he was comfortable with the readiness levels of non-deployed Army units, Schoomaker replied, quote, no. A senior Army planner said before, if a unit was less than C1 or fully ready, someone would get fired. Now, that is accepted. It's a cost of continuous operations, says this senior Army planner. You can't be ready all the time. Feeling safe yet? And I was wondering in the pages of the, in the virtual pages of the Huffington Post this week, why none of the commentary, of which there was too much about the Iraq Survey Group report, zeroed in on that suggestion of training, focusing on the training, because I'd shared with you on this broadcast in recent weeks a couple of reports saying the training sucked in both Iraq and Afghanistan. So do more of that thing that we don't do well. This also from the Washington Post on in the Sunday edition. The newest program for training Iraqi security forces, embedding 11 to 15 U.S. troops in Iraqi battalions, represents a high-risk assessment for the American officers and men involved, according to top military training officials. The concept is considered so dangerous that a group of potential replacements stand ready at Fort Riley, where the program is being directed, for immediate shipment to Iraq if members of a deployed team are killed or wounded. The U.S. training remains a work in progress 3 years after it began, according to present and former senior Army and Marine officers. A work in progress. Complicating matters in the training was a desire among coalition officials in 2003 and 2004 to keep the new Iraqi army lightly armed so it couldn't threaten the government. The result of the hesitant U.S. training effort, according to the self-same Iraq study group, is that Iraqi army units are of questionable loyalty, the police units can't control crime, and some routinely engage in sectarian violence. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, how do you enjoy the training? Okay, I think it's time for a copyrighted feature. Let's see exactly which one it will be. It's news from outside the bubble. This should be fun. The music sounds like fun. What are the Saudis doing these days? Here's the Saudi intelligence chief, Prince Abdullah Aziz Al Saud. What does he say? Israel's nuclear arsenal is the largest strategic threat to the Middle East and appears set to trigger a regional nuclear arms race. Speaking at the International Institute of Strategic Studies conference, Prince Mukrin bin Abdulaziz Al Saud, enough names, babe, says, quote, the existing Israeli nuclear capability is the most dangerous strategic threat to Gulf security in the short and medium term. He says it's driving some countries in the region to join an arms race. It's the Saudis, our friends. He did not name countries. I think when you're a country, you've already been named. Oh, I see what you mean. But appear to be referring to Iran. The spread of weapons of mass destruction will complicate security in this region, Mukrin said. My position is against any nuclear weapons of mass destruction in the whole region, including Israel, he says. Our friend. But wait, there's more. From The Independent, the British newspaper, British intelligence officers and military commanders have accused the United States of undermining British policies in Iraq and Afghanistan after the firing of a key British ally in the Afghan province of Helmand. British sources have blamed pressure from the CIA for President Karzai's decision to dismiss the governor of Helmand, the southern province where Britain has 4,000 troops this year. The governor was appointed in mid-year to replace a man the British accused of involvement in opium trafficking. The Americans knew the governor was a main British ally, one official told The Independent, yet they deliberately undermined him and told Karzai to fire him. Meanwhile, a confidential assessment of the situation in Iraq seen by The Independent has reported serious tensions in the American-British coalition. American commanders in the country are believed to oppose the British strategy for handing over two provinces to Iraqi control as part of an exit strategy. Who, us? Exit? British officials regarded that governor as the cleanest governor in Afghanistan and hoped his extensive experience and development would help win over the population of the province. And from an American newspaper company, McClatchy, but reporting from Beirut, American political leaders watched with alarm during the past week as the Hezbollah militia laid siege to the U.S.-backed Lebanese government, but few would acknowledge publicly what most analysts and politicians in Beirut say is obvious. American policy bears much of the blame. Many in Beirut say U.S. failure to stop Israel's onslaught against Hezbollah last summer crippled the The Lebanese government, a U.S. ally, while strengthening Hezbollah, a U.S. enemy. That created the environment in which the Shiite, Muslim militia could call for overthrowing the Sunni Muslim prime minister. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. You know, I love to bring you tales of the digital wonderland that is opening up, beckoning us all. Within about 2 years, they're going to turn off our analog... Actually, yeah, 2 years. Turn off our analog TVs. So this is from Broadcasting and Cable magazine. This is apropos of that great picture you're being promised. That wonderful digital quality picture. By the way, digital quality means it's digital. It can be so many different qualities because they can control the number of bits. Am I getting too technical already? So the fewer bits, the worse the picture. And it's up to them. It's not up to you. You don't get to choose the bits. You don't get to choose the bits on this show either. So Glenn Reitmeier of NBC, vice president of technology standards, says the best signal you can get, digital signal, is a direct over-the-air signal. Get those rabbit ears out. Why? Quote, because the cable head end, your cable headquarters, picks up the high-definition signal and goes down to about, and he gives a number here, which is a lower bit number, which makes the quality less than over-the-air, says Reitmeier. And in digital satellites, there are not only different bit rates, but different codecs, which is a technical term, meaning different formats, being used. While HD is all about delivering visually alluring images, the mixing and matching of formats and bit rates is a threat, says Reitmeier. And here's the money quote, ladies and gentlemen. It's very important that we don't turn the wow of HD into a yuck. So when you pay those $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 for a TV, remember, we're trying hard to keep the wow from becoming a yuck. And now, news of the warm.
Soft, listen to the warm. We can listen to the warm.
Global warming has begun to change the way microscopic plant life in the oceans absorbs carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, a trend that could lead to a dramatic increase in the heating power of the greenhouse effect. Satellite data gathered over the past 10 years shows for the first time that the growth of marine phytoplankton, the basis of the entire ocean food chain, that's all, is being adversely affected by rising sea temperatures. Scientists have found that as the oceans become warmer, they're less able to support the phytoplankton that have been an important influence on moderating climate change. The fear, it's described as that by the Independent newspaper of London, is that as sea temperatures continue to rise as a result of global warming, the loss of phytoplankton will lead to a positive feedback cycle. Not good in this case, where increases in carbon dioxide concentrations in the atmosphere lead to warmer oceans, and warmer oceans lead to increasing carbon dioxide concentrations. A team of American scientists has used a NASA satellite to study global concentrations of phytoplankton over the past two decades to see how ocean productivity changes with sea temperatures. The result was a clear link between warmer oceans and decreases in ocean productivity. This is in a study published in the journal Nature. So forget about eating fish. Make friends with your cows. Birds. What about the birds? Birds are delaying their annual winter migration to Africa from France. Oh, these are French birds, of course, just trying to show us up, because of the unseasonably warm weather, according to a French bird protection group. From Ottawa to Moscow, temperatures generally have been way above average at the start of the winter in the Northern Hemisphere. Flowers are blooming on the slopes of alpine ski resorts, and bears are struggling to hibernate, except the bears in the Coke commercials. They seem to be doing fine. The autumn was the warmest in France since 1950, but that's France. Temperatures 5 degrees above norms. Long-distance migratory birds that spend the winter in tropical Africa seem to be particularly late in leaving this autumn, says the League for the Protection of Birds. Swallows all over France, including in the north, as well as warblers, which usually leave in August or September. It's warmer now in Europe's alpine region than at any time in the past 1,300 years. But who's counting? And ski resorts may be going out of business in Spain, where nearly all the slopes are closed for lack of snow, according to the daily newspaper El País. The Pyrenees have only a quarter of the amount of snow which is usual for the beginning of December, and the situation is similar in other winter sport areas. The situation has not occurred to a comparable extent since 1995. Excuse me. The Environment Ministry attributed the lack of snow, however, to global warming, which threatens thousands of jobs linked to the skiing industry. Ski resort operators should convert them into other kinds of mountain resorts, according to the tourism ministry, like falling down a rocky slope resort. That would be good. But on the other hand, mankind has less effect on global warming than previously supposed. This, according to a United Nations report on climate change, supposed to be coming out next year, according to the British newspaper The Telegraph. The UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change says there can be little doubt that humans are responsible for warming the planet, but the organization now reduces the overall estimate of this effect by 25%. So we're 25% less guilty. That's important. Tell Senator Imhoff. In a final draft of the fourth assessment report to be published in February, the panel reports that the level of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere has accelerated in the last 5 years. It also predicts temperatures will rise by up to 4.5 degrees centigrade during the next century, bringing more frequent heat waves and storms. But the panel has lowered predictions of how much sea levels will rise in comparison with its last report 5 years ago. Climate change skeptics are expected to seize on the revised figures. Scientists insist that the lower its estimates for sea levels and the human impact on global warming are simply a refinement due to better data. But both agree that news of the warm is a copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Travel back in time, so the flips are switching. I collapse inside. It's all wrong, all wrong, all wrong.
This is Le Show. And a couple more, actually, items from outside the bubble. You know, ladies and gentlemen, we've heard all the debates in this country about this country's treatment of detainees at Guantanamo. But here's a look at it from the other end of the telescope. This is from the Australian newspaper, The Age. In the formal language of diplomacy, an Australian passport seeks for its owner the right to, quote, pass freely without let or hindrance. That done, it begs further, quote, every assistance and protection of which he or she may stand in need. In the case of the alleged terrorist and Guantanamo Bay detainee, Australian David Hicks, The Commonwealth of Australia has failed to act to secure that protection, says the Attorney General of the state of Victoria, in which Melbourne is located. He says Australia's treatment of him is, quote, an abomination. Australia had a moral obligation to see its citizens were afforded fair and proper process wherever they were. If you're not prepared to do that, you have to ask what the Australian passport is worth. People who commit terrorist acts, he continues, should face the full force of the law. But quite simply, what we have here is a situation where an Australian citizen has languished for 5 years without trial while the government spits, splutters, and stutters, but has not done anything meaningful in ensuring due process is followed. Hicks, now 31, was captured in Afghanistan in, 5 years ago, while guarding a tank for the Taliban regime. He's been in U.S. custody since December of 2001. Since then, 450 others like him have been returned to their countries of origin, including many who were released because the British government said, hey, release them, would you please? And then Britain secured that in 2004, March. The Australian Attorney General for the state of Victoria said the only obstacle to Hicks' release is the will of the Australian government to demand it. And one authority says it's the lack of a Bill of Rights that means the value of an Australian passport floats like the value of its currency. Australia is the only Western country not to have enshrined the rights and obligations of its people in a legal charter. So next time your kid asks you what the hell is the Bill of Rights for, might keep him out of Gitmo. Might. You never know. And from Asian Times, now the Taliban have asked to come down from the mountains and reestablish themselves among the people of the southwest of Afghanistan. The dirt poor people, tribes people of the southwest, voted unanimously to give the Americans a chance when the Americans came in. They handed the defeated Taliban an ultimatum: be good sons of the soil and surrender your guns, go to the mountains. The Taliban started their insurgency in the mountains, and now they've been asked to come back down, giving the Taliban a friendly environment from which to launch the first phase in their goal of taking first Kandahar and then Kabul. The Americans promised paradise in the southwest, but tribespeople were drafted into the Afghan National Army on a non-tribal basis, which created resentment. See, if we do it tribally, as in Iraq, we're wrong. If we do it non-tribally in Afghanistan, we're wrong. We really don't know what we're doing in these places, ladies and gentlemen. Do we? What little reconstruction and development work that was undertaken in Afghanistan all but bypassed the southwest. The killer blow, as far as the tribespeople were concerned, was the decision to ban poppy cultivation without adequate compensation. So that's the news from Afghanistan, where all the children are Afghans. Now, how are the inspector generals doing? By the way, the Congress, before it skedaddled out of Washington, did agree to extend funding for the Inspector General for Iraqi Reconstruction, despite the administration's attempt to get that spigot turned off in 2008. So that's the good news. Now, here's the good news. The U.S. Minerals Management Service Oil and Gas Royalty Payments Compliance Program, that's the program that makes oil companies pay royalties to the federal government when they pump out oil. How's it doing? It's ineffective. And it needs to be fundamentally reformed, according to the Interior Department's Inspector General. Well, let's fire him. He shouldn't be saying that. With inaccurate and incomplete data and compliance reviews that, quote, do not accurately evaluate company-reported volume data, the Inspector General says there's a high risk the service, that's a term of art, ladies and gentlemen, the service may not detect underpaid royalties. As a result, it cannot determine the true cost and benefits of the royalty program and has no complete picture of just how much oil companies owe the government. Can we get the tax system set up that way, please? Why don't we all, hey, ladies and gentlemen, let's all just redefine ourselves as oil companies. What do you say? I'm not a person anymore. I'm an oil company. Give me that system where you don't know much how much I owe you. Then we'll talk. Industry watchdogs, lawmakers, and ex-auditors of the agency have accused the MMS, as it's called, of being too cozy with the oil and gas industry. Unheard of. Well, all right, I'm an oil company. Get cozy with me, please. And not collecting hundreds of millions of dollars worth of royalty payments. That from an inspector general. The nerve of the guy. And from another inspector general, the Justice Department's inspector general warned this week that, oh no, here we go again. Can somebody just donate some good computers to the FBI? Seriously, there must be some computer magnates listening to this broadcast. Just, please, just give them a bunch of computers that work, because listen to this. Funding for the FBI's new Sentinel computer system is uncertain. The program's final price tag could exceed its $425 million budget. A 1,200-page audit by the Inspector General says a current White House budget request includes only $100 million, although the FBI says it needs another 50 above that to keep it going. The FBI will make up the difference with funds from other areas, but the Inspector General warns moving too much money could erode the FBI's mission capability in counterterrorism. But we do want to have those good computers, don't we? The FBI has been screwing around with its computer system, as you know, for years. And it makes you wonder, we're going to trust them to catch, what, criminals and prevent terrorism, and they can't even set up a computer system that works. So, Sentinel is designed to give agents the ability to manage case files from computers at their desks. Well, that's so space age. Now I understand how difficult it is to actually manage your work from your desk. Who's heard of that? This is the second audit from the Inspector General's office. It warned in March that the FBI was at risk of repeating many of the same mistakes with Sentinel that it made with a failed attempt to build a computerized case management system, the virtual case file, to replace the FBI's antiquated paper system. Virtual case file cost the government $170 million and was abandoned as a failure last year. So we do have experience in abandoning something as a failure. Maybe they should, the guys who ran that should write the next report on Iraq. Previous reviews found the FBI did a poor job of overseeing and managing the virtual case file, and the main contractor delivered a product that was incomplete and unusable. But the box looked nice. In contrast to that system, which was built from scratch, Sentinel relies primarily on off-the-shelf commercial software adapted for the FBI. Lockheed Martin is going to receive $305 million as the main contractor for the program. So they're the ones that are adapting the software. That's so tough, because you got to, what? The audit raised questions about the assumptions underlying the FBI's cost estimate. It's based on rough calculations. The newest report does say the FBI has made significant progress in several key areas, including finding ways to ensure the software will work as intended. This is government work, ladies and gentlemen. They have made progress in finding ways to see that the software will work as intended. But we're going to trust our safety to them, aren't we? Won't we? Don't all answer at once.
If I die and have 3 wishes, I would ask to swim with fishes, please. 'Cause I have fought with life's distresses, but here with my princesses, things look very clear. And I am happy here. And in this room, Mother Earth and Father Sea. And in this room, God swims with me.
They even have the coolest coos. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
The Grand Rapids area bus system is rethinking its security policy after a Muslim woman complained about being banned from a bus. This is Grand Rapids, Michigan. A Muslim woman said the driver would not let her on the bus unless she uncovered her face. The policy was put in place because there are cameras on each bus, and if there was a crime, the cameras could help in the identification of suspects. The veiled woman who was banned from the bus says she was able to ride other buses without having to uncover her face. The implication was that this driver was discriminating against her. The district would not identify the bus driver or the woman. But the Transit District apologized for the incident and rescinded its policy. A Christmas party firm has apologized to more than 1,000 people whose plans were wrecked when it went bankrupt. This is in Britain. I read this only because the name of the company is UK Balls Limited. A statement for the firm said, "We want to genuinely apologize to our loyal staff and to everyone that has purchased tickets. The Balls, IC parties, were to be held in West Bromwich." The firm said the problems were caused when a number of firms who'd said they would be attending the balls made alternate arrangements. Back in this country, radio talk show host Anita Marks in Baltimore, billed as the ultimate sports chick, apologized on her show this week for comments she made the day before about San Diego Chargers linebacker Sean Merriman. On her Tuesday show, she referred to Merriman, who is black and was recently suspended by the NFL for steroids, as a, quote, juice monkey, unquote. "I used a phrase that pertains to an athlete that uses steroids. It was not a racist remark," Marks said at the top of her show. "I didn't mean anything by it in regards to the color of his skin." Cultural icon Rolf Harris. If you're old enough, you may remember his hit song from the 50s, Tie Me Kangaroo Down, Sport, has expressed his regret over racist lyrics that were part of the hit. He wrote the offending verse in 1960, which contains the anti-Aborigine line, "Let me abos go loose, Lou, they're no further loose, use, Lou." "I was 25 or something when I wrote that," the artist told Radio Scotland, "but since 1960, I've never sung that verse." He later added he has great love and respect for the Aborigines. The word abo is widely considered as highly offensive and is the equivalent of the racist term packy. Pardon me. The P word. Dateline New York, comedian Jackie Mason has dropped a federal lawsuit against Jews for Jesus after the group apologized for using his name and likeness in a gospel pamphlet. Jews for Jesus, founded in the 1970s, regards Jesus as the Messiah and seeks converts. In a letter, the group's executive director, David Brickner, apologized for any distress that Mason felt over the track featuring his image next to the words, quote, "Jackie Mason, a Jew for Jesus, exclamation point, question mark." Brickner said it's one of many tracts that Jews for Jesus regularly writes and distributes. He said that while he believed its publication was constitutionally protected, Jews for Jesus is willing to retire it in the interests of peace and love for Israel. After agreeing to drop the lawsuit, Mason told reporters, "There's no such thing as a Jew for Jesus." I guess that's an apology. Dateline Columbus, Indiana, a high school is recalling its 2005-2006 yearbook because of an offensive comment included in a caption next to photos of students playing basketball. It's a sexually suggestive comment, although the AP refuses to print it. School officials are investigating how the comment ended up next to a photo of a female basketball player shooting baskets. Boy, sure would love to know what that comment is. Principal Gary Goshorn said about half of the books were returned. He's asking students who have the remaining books to return them so a corrected page can be inserted. "It's something we're taking seriously," he said, "and we're sorry it happened." Yeah. Nowhere in the story does it tell what's offensive. I guess we're just going to have to dream about that. The president of Dartmouth College has apologized for a string of incidents this fall that many Native American students viewed as racist. In an email to students, President James Wright urged students to do more to make the university a welcoming and respectful place. "They are members of the community. They are your classmates and friends," Wright wrote of the American Indian students, "and they deserve more and better than to be abstracted as symbols and playthings." The Native American Council took out an advertisement in a student newspaper describing a troubling series of events. Fraternity pledges disrupted a drum circle on Columbus Day, and in November, the crew team held a party with a Cowboys and Indians theme. Team captains later apologized. Britney Spears, remember her? You know who she is? She's apologized to her fans for her recent run of flashing her nude, no-pantied bottom. You apologize for that? The 25-year-old mother of two, who's been partying almost nonstop since splitting from husband Kevin Federline last month. You've been following this, haven't you? Admitted she may have gone too far after being caught not wearing pants on four separate occasions. In a statement on her official website, Spears said, I probably did take my newfound freedom a little far. She admits she got carried away after being a stay-at-home mother for so long. She apologizes, ladies and gentlemen. But she'd like you to buy her records. And Walmart has fired its new advertising agency. The final straw was an embarrassing blunder committed last month that had the industry snickering. In an attempt to pay tribute to the winners of the prestigious Lion Awards at Cannes, the agency ran a graphic ad in a trade publication that showed two lions having sex, the male on top, with the tagline, "It's good to be on top." The agency apologized for the ad and claimed that it didn't go through the proper channels for approval. Walmart has now fired the agency. And my favorite apology of the week, Dateline Tallahassee, Florida. There have been other misconduct complaints against him before, but Florida's Supreme Court says Judge John Sloop went too far. He's being ruled unfit for the bench after an incident in which he jailed 11 people who were late for traffic court. They were late because they'd been sent to the wrong courtroom. Two other judges and a bailiff explained what happened. Sloop not only had them locked up for 9 hours, they were also strip searched. In its ruling, the court cited Sloop for what they called his indifference to the humiliation and hardship the victims faced and apologized to the victims. But you know what I say, ladies and gentlemen. I say, let Judge John Sloop be. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. By the way, I left out the fact that I'll be signing and reading from Not Enough Indians, my new novel, at Booksmith in Brookline, Massachusetts, tomorrow, Monday night. It's not a big college town, so come on by. But that does conclude the broadcast. The program returns next week at the same time with CD burners intact over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the UFSN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415, available as a free download at www.audible.com/leshow, available as a free podcast at kcrw.com, available on your computer via the internet around the world whenever you want it at two different locations, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And it'd be just like having another Iraq study group if you could agree to join with me then, would you? All righty. Thank you very much. You know, because if one is good, I'm Harry the Oil Company. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack, a tip of Le Show chapeau to the Pittsburgh and San Diego desks. Le Show playlists usually available at harryshearer.com, unless I forget. Next week, The Year in Rebuke, Part 1. Maybe. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world, don't you know, as the home of the homeless.